Never know with men of a certain age.
I hear you. Yeah, we just got lucky that I don't need a bathroom break.
Yeah, we need to hurry up or I'm going to need one. Welcome to Death Watch, the Star Wars podcast from a galaxy not so far, far away. I'm Mike Bennett. And today, I'm joined by guest host and friend of the show, Ryan Fitzgerald, a.k.a. Sam Orion. And we'll be discussing the second episode, no, the third episode of The Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 3.
The Streets of Mos Espa.
Ryan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So it's been a minute since we've had a guest on the show, which is why I'm fumbling through my words, not being a normal paragraph. But it's great to have Chris. He's been, or have Ryan here. He's been along the ride for a while, following us on socials and everything else. So it's great to have you participate in the show. When we usually have a guest on, we like to ask you how you got involved in Star Wars and then, go through your, how you rank the, you know, the primary movies and why The Last Jedi is the worst one. So go ahead.
Well, I kind of have like a Batman Bane answer. Like, you chose to be in Star Wars. I was born into it. Nice. So I was born in 1976. A New Hope came out in 77. I don't even remember seeing that for the first time. It's just part of my core, you know. It's just part of who I am.
Yeah.
Star Wars is my religion, you know. You guys are fond of saying you're men of a certain age. Well, I'm even more of a certain age.
That's good.
So yeah, I don't even remember seeing Star Wars, A New Hope and Empire for the first time. I was seven for Return of the Jedi, so that hit me hard. You know, the Ewoks, every little kid loves that. But as I got older, I definitely am more of the Clerks argument that Empire had the better ending. So
I love it.
So my ranking is original trilogy always wins. And we'll go Empire, A New Hope, Jedi. Mm-hmm. And we'll throw in some Ewok adventures.
Ooh, okay.
Deep cut. And then Rogue One, and then probably everything else. And I would put everything else at like episode 2, 1, 3, Solo, 9, 7, 8. Mm. It's just numbers, but you know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, no, we're you and I are not so far off. I think Rogue One was a great one-off in how the way it ties into the other trilogies. And we're pretty aligned on the other two trilogies as well. So, and I thought Solo was better than people said it was. So glad to see it get a little bit of love. So why don't we hop into today's episode. This was directed by Robert Rodriguez, who famously directed the episode of last season of The Mandalorian when Boba Fett shows up in his armor and is kind of reintroduced to the lore as the guy in the armor. And he also played the mayor, or voiced the mayor, Mokshaiz, in this series. He kind of keeps popping up in little random cameos, but he directed this episode, and it was also written by Jon Favreau, as are all of the series episodes. So we open with that same little spider droid thing with the red fishbowl. It looks
what is that?
The baby Kool-Aid man being carried around. I thought it was in one of my old like Star Wars reference guides. I could not find what that droid was, so we'll just have to leave it at that. And then we go inside to the throne room, and 88 is giving a little soliloquy / history update on what the crime lord situation is in Mos Espa. I think we mentioned it. This guy is voiced by Matt Berry. Chris and I don't really know who Matt Berry is. Is he anything to you, Ryan?
Yeah, he's been in some good stuff. You mentioned last episode or before the IT crowd, and I kind of recognize him, but not quite. We'll probably hear more of him. 8D8. He was in Return of the Jedi, you guys were talking about him being like somewhat familiar. Mm-hmm. I think he was the one who assigned R2 to be a cocktail waitress.
Yeah, yeah.
And like he was the one. He's like a droid slave master. You know, he was like pulling down the crank to burn the feet on that one little guy.
Right, right.
And so he's kind of just like a quartermaster or just like a boss's assistant, I think.
Yeah, he definitely has like a dark side in his programming. he's bent towards cruelty. So we talk about a little bit here where there's this cool hollow map of Mos Espa and that crater and, you know, general districts. We see that after Jabba dies, the town is kind of divided up by the amongst the Trandoshans, the Aqualish, and the Clatonians. They get different parts of the city. And that was also, that was just so that kind of order could be maintained and Bib Fortuna could hold on to a small amount of, I won't even call it power, it's just kind of the illusion of power. And then we get this great cameo by Steven Root. He plays a water monger, like a, you know, guy who sells water on a planet that where water is a pretty significant resource. His name's Lortha Peel. I thought his character was played well the entire time that he is kind of complaining to Boba Fett about this group stealing his stuff. I could not hear anything but him, his character from Office Space, droning on about.
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
It was great.
these cyborgs stole my stapler.
Yeah, he was full on Karen in this scene too, like just complaining about these punk kids stealing his stuff, and he was like, in sort of the true like character. Caricature of what a Karen is, like making it more of a deal than I feel like it actually was, because he tells him basically you need to take care of this because everybody before you took care of it. So he goes out there and it's kind of like these, like, I don't know, punk teenagers who, yeah, they've got a little bit of like cybernetic implants, but they don't seem threatening to me in any way, any more than anyone else in Mos Espa would seem threatening.
Yeah. That Lortha Peel, played there by Steven Root. I forget exactly what his dialogue was, but it was hilarious the way he was like, I was insulted on your behalf. I thought it was disrespectful to you. Like he's trying to play it off that this is your problem that I'm presenting to you. I'm doing you a favor.
Yeah. And then we cut to a night flyover of Mos Espa and are introduced to, from my perspective, the most useless characters of the series so far. They only do one small thing that I feel like was a profitable advance of the story, but this little biker gang, they're around, I don't know, they're selling water or something. They're doing something with water. And Boba initially rolls up a lot like harder, like, hey, you guys stole this, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, dude, yeah, we stole it, but this guy's charging us like all of our money for just some water. And we don't even have a job anyway, because there are no jobs here, because the economy has collapsed since Jabba died. And Boba kind of does a 180 at this point. He's like, all right, well, if you want to work, you can work for me. And takes on what was originally, or he entered this situation, they're sort of like his enemy slash their competition, they're on his turf, and then flips the script and hires him. And so they become his kind of literally his biker gang.
Yeah, it was the classic young punks versus tough old man.
Right. And then Karen comes running back out because he's not getting his money back. He's pretty upset about that.
Yeah, well, was he just like hiding behind a corner listening to the whole thing?
For real, like I've probably seen too many Karen videos in the last couple of weeks, so it's on the top of my mind. But he's like literally, you know, filming on his iPhone behind the corner. And as soon as he doesn't see something he likes, he pops out and complains about it.
To no avail.
We cut to our opening credits. The music, you know, is still great. My kids actually like to just sit and listen to it because it's just nice, like, background music.
That's cool.
Yeah. And you, what were you saying about
it? I haven't looked at who does the music, but it just feels like Conan the Barbarian, you know? Just yeah, dun, 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 dun. Like, I love it. And then of course, Boba sitting in his throne is so Conan the Barbarian, you know? But that's a time for another story and all that. I love it.
Yeah. So I, when you mentioned that, I had to look it up, and it does remind me a lot of what the Conan theme song was. Mm-hmm. Although the music for this series is by Ludwig Göransson, the same guy who did the Mandalorian music. So he kind of seems to be the go-to Star Wars composer at this point, but it's great. Cuts to the title card, the streets of Mos Espa. And when we come back to Boba's palace, the little like 1 second or like 3 or 4 seconds cutscene where there's a little like frog animal, it eats the other animal as it's getting eaten by a bird. Yeah. Kind of shows the awful life of someone living on Tatooine. There's always someone ready to take you out. I think this is like the same kind of scene. It's like a duplicate of a scene from, I think it's Return of the Jedi, when the droids are coming to Jabba's palace. It's special edition version, not original version. But there's the same creature, and it, you know, catches a little chicken bird with its tongue.
Yeah, I'm really impressed about like the number of animals that survive on Tatooine. There's just a huge ecosystem going on there.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. I mean, we were talking about it last week. You know, obviously Tatooine is a desert planet, but it's been brought up a few times in certain ways, and it got brought up again today in this episode, that it was an ocean planet at one time. And so we looked a little bit further into it, and I mentioned it was destroyed by the Rakatan Empire like 25,000 years ago, an all-powerful race that you encounter in the KOTOR video games. But they basically glassed the planet from space and just lasered the oceans. And over time, the glass broke into sand, and the like native species to the planet eventually divided and became the Tuscans and the Jawas. So they're both like descended from the same species. It's just interesting, but
it is really interesting.
It's a deep cut for the Tatooine history there.
Well, I'm into it. And I'm really interested that the Jawas are interplanetary. We see Jawas on different planets now.
Yeah, the Jawas kind of figured out that it's not worth getting stuck on your territorial claim of a patch of desert, and you should just branch out and make it your way in the galaxy. So we cut from this lizard scene outside to another flashback to this is the second or third time now we've seen this short clip of young Boba looking out the window on a rainy day in Kamino as Slave One flies away. This has got to be indicative of something at some point. I don't know what it is, but it's got that cool ending. The ship fades away to Boba's face in the glass reflecting. Very satisfying.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Young Boba putting his hand on the window with the rain outside, and then cutting to current Boba inside the back to tank. That was beautiful.
I'm curious if they like had that stock footage somewhere that they filmed back when they did the Attack of the Clones. Because he's played by Daniel Logan, who's now, you know, 20 something. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely his original face. Or I wonder if they like cut that clip out of some other footage and then redid this shot. It'd be interesting to see how they actually pulled that off. We come back. So this flashback is now on Tatooine. Boba is with the Tuscans, and he's saddling up on one of his Banthas, which I have to admit is like, it feels like one of the worst modes of transportation. It just goes so slow.
They are so slow, yeah. But they must just be like camels, and they could just handle it, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that's got to be a part of, like, the Tuscan culture seems patient overall.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, they are not getting everything immediately all the time. He rides off on his own. He runs into some Jawas who give him directions to where the Pike Syndicate is. So we now get tied into last episode when he made this arrangement with the Pikes and protecting their trade route through their territory. There's this cool quick scene. He's riding past a bunch of the stormtrooper buckets, the helmets on spikes, outside of one of the buildings. This is the same scene we saw in The Mandalorian when Mando comes there. So a nice little callback. And I love, you were talking about the fact that the Pikes look like the Squid Game, like referee guys.
They sure do.
I didn't even think of it until you said it. And now all I can do is wonder which ones are the circle face and the square face.
Well, they definitely have a hierarchy and you know, their masks seem to be different according to that hierarchy.
Yeah. I need to go back and play it again and see if in the background of this Pike building, you can hear the ominous music. So Boba comes in. He's like, hey, I'm here for my money. They're like, sorry, we're not going to pay two people to protect this area. And he's like, no, we're all the same. You can just pay us. He's like, no, we're paying this biker gang. I'm curious what you think about if this is a ploy or a setup by the Pikes or a genuine misunderstanding, because, you know, it gets worse in a moment. But I wonder if the Pikes decided to choose the biker gang, the J.J. Abrams gang, as opposed to the Tuskens, and set up a poor situation, or if this was just a genuine misunderstanding. Because, you know, Boba walks away from this, says, all right, I'm gonna go make this right. But I love, have you seen Hamilton? Broadway show?
No.
Okay. That's too bad. You should go after this. All go right. Listen to the whole thing.
I'll write it down.
It is on Disney Plus, although we're not sponsored by Disney Plus, but you can watch it there.
Not yet.
The line is like almost word for word that the Pike guy says. He says, I look forward to our partnership, which is what Aaron Burr says to Thomas Jefferson after coming in second for the president, which at the time made Aaron Burr vice president.
Okay.
Even though they were like hating each other weeks before when they were campaigning. But it definitely seems like, to me, a tongue-in-cheek response, as in like, I look forward to our partnership, like, but we're not going to have a partnership.
I think that they are not making any misunderstandings. I don't think that they are slipping up at all. I think this is all just according to their normal business plan. They say, mm-hmm. Hey, you got to pay protection. That's understood. And so I think that they're just straight up pitting Boba against the biker gang. And these are, what are they called? The Kintan Striders. Because we have like two biker gangs. We got like badass chopper biker gang, and then we've got like a moped biker gang.
Yeah.
But I think that the Squid Game guys totally just said, you know, if you can kill them, then the job is yours. But very likely they also said, if you can kill Boba, then the job is yours. So they don't care as long as the job gets done.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out what their like logo is. Because it looks like Orabesh, like the letter T, but like the double J, that kind of looks like the letter for T in Orabesh. But it doesn't seem to read that way. But that doesn't make sense. This is like the Kintan Striders. There's no T in there. So I'm still curious as to why they have that J.J. Abrams logo. We have this, it seems like Boba goes to look for the biker gang, but then sees smoke in the distance, and he comes up on the Tusken encampment, which has been burned. Everyone has been killed, and the chieftain tent has been marked with, you know, the logo of the biker gang. I found this moment remarkably emotionless. Like, Boba runs kind of over from the Bantha to look at it. But then the entire time he just is emotionless in dealing with the bodies, piling them up to burn them, taken care of and moving on. It just, there's like almost nothing here that shows he was feeling something, which I have to believe is just storing up for some later occurrence. I don't know what you thought about that.
Yeah, I agree with you. At the very final moment after he's piled all the bodies on the fire, you know, it looks like he might maybe consider almost crying one tear, but then he's like, nope, that's not going to happen.
Done.
But it gave me the feeling of like the start of a old like revenge movie, you know, a Steven Seagal type of movie, you know?
Yeah, that's true. If Temuera Morrison couldn't have played Boba Fett, Steven Seagal would have been a great number two. That'd be great. And then I was just going to make a note here that I was thinking about while watching this is, you know, in the same way, there's like this parallel narrative that I see between Django and Boba, in that, you know, Django as a child was rescued by Jasper Muriel of the Mandalorian clan and became a Mandalorian and adopted their ways. And now, similarly, Boba has been rescued and adopted by this Tusken tribe, adopting their ways and becoming like them. So I don't know where that's going yet, but that definitely seems like an intentional, like strong storyline that they're developing. So we'll kind of see where that goes.
They have interesting ways, and it's pretty neat to like get into the Tuskens and learn more about them. It's kind of confusing that they like burn everything. I thought that they would try to save more and recycle more, not necessarily recycle, but you know, they burn everybody else's masks and their gaffy sticks and their robes. And it seems like that kind of culture would really need to save stuff.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, I think in the way we were talking last week about the gaffy stick being such a personal object, and you know, it being something you make yourself and as part of probably this like coming of age ritual or whatever, it is actually part of you. And so there is nothing to recycle, and it's just, it died with you kind of deal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Kind of poetic. So what's interesting about this flashback though is it starts to end with like a lens wipe, a lens coloration, and then just a quick cut from there to Boba getting ripped out of the thing. You can see the glass open, the water gushes out, and then a half-naked Temuera Morrison is flung on the ground. And it's obviously Krasantan, the Wookiee bounty hunter, has come to get him. This was so... this guy was just unstoppable. I kind of couldn't believe how unstoppable he was. I guess we've seen Wookiees fight and they're incredibly formidable. And if he's one of the most aggressive Wookiees, I guess it tracks well. But it was kind of crazy how unstoppable he was.
But he gave Boba a chance, because he could have just like thrown a grenade at the Bacta tank or shot him with his rifle or, you know, slit his throat or anything. But instead he picks him up out of the Bacta tank and throws him into a wall of weapons. Here, take your pick.
And then soon after, the Power Rangers come running in, the blue, green, yellow, red, biker gang guys come in and really don't do a whole lot to help, but it's entertaining for a moment as they fling their little, it's like they're using slingshots and wiffle bats to attack him.
But it shows how strong he is.
Yeah, it's good, because they actually are real weapons and they're not doing much to him. Then the Gamorreans come running in and they get their butts kicked, eventually getting flung down and rolling down the stairs with him and into the throne room. A nice little, I'm starting to architecturally put together where these rooms are in this building.
As I was watching I was thinking about you guys thinking about it from an architect's viewpoint. Because we see the throne room and we see the Bacta room. And we see dungeons and stuff, but we don't really know how they fit together until now.
Yeah. Well, if you like recognize from the outside look at the palace, there's like that ring of windows at the top, which the only place we've seen windows is in this like back to room. Everywhere else, including the throne room, is like dungeony. There's no like natural light coming in there except like peripherally through hallways and stuff. So it makes sense that they would be upstairs and need to roll downstairs into the, but it's just, it's cool to see it happen. And then this whole tussle ends with Fennec running in and pressing the button to drop him down into the Rancor pit. Including, I love the little detail of her grabbing her little ninja star out of the, you know, the butt of the rifle and flinging it at him. That was cool. I know we've seen her use that before, but it just, it's a cool detail that I'm sure cosplayers love making that rifle and that little, slot.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
In ancient Japan, some swords would have a little tiny, dagger like that. Not a dagger. Huh. They would call it a shuriken. And we think of that as like a throwing star, but it could just be like a needle type of thing. The same thing that Fennec has. So,
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of relates to a real world weapon. So from here, what was interesting is the end of this battle ends with Boba telling them to take one of the Gamorreans who gets like his shoulder bit off by Kersantan. It's like, take him to my Bacta tank, which, you know, he says, take him to my Bacta tank, meaning like it's not like to the, you know, the room full of recovery pods. It's like, I'm going to give him my recovery pod, even though he clearly is going to need it himself. Cause there was that one moment where he was like bear hugging him and you can like hear his spine cracking.
Yes.
And that, I almost couldn't believe he made it out of that moment. Like, I'm just like, he's getting broken in half right now. How does he even get up after that? But he's definitely going to need to be healed, but he gives it at first to his Gamorrean guard that he can be healed.
Good leadership.
Yes. They're like, they cut to this, the conference room, we'll call it, where they're eating quite a nice, spread. Fennec's eating. I guess Bob is kind of looking at it. The little droid comes in with more food. He's like, dude, we're good. Stop. Which makes me wonder where all this food comes from. Like, this is both large feast and diverse feast. There's all kinds of different foods. I'm sure they come from all over. So it's definitely a lot going on here. We hear him refer to the larder later. Mm-hmm. So you know that there's some kind of like on campus food storage.
The food looked good.
It did. I was like, I was hungry when I watched it the first time and regretted that. And he's interrupted by 88, who pops his head in and says, the twins are here. We remember this is a callback to last episode. The twins are these two Fets. These two Hutts.
They're cousins of Jabba.
Exactly. Who have come originally to lay claim to his throne and his rule. They've now come to let him know that they're sorry that they sent Kersantan to kill him.
sorry it didn't work out. Sorry that he failed.
Right. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry, but we're trapped in this now. So we're going to say sorry. Again, Boba is not like keeping the status quo from previous regimes where blood is returned for blood or, you know, revenge ruled the day. It was kind of like, all right, yeah, well, you failed. Don't do that again. Here's your guy back. They're like, no, we don't want him. He's our gift to you. But in addition to this gift, they've brought him another Rancor.
Hell yeah.
Which was, I don't know. I was not expecting that gift. I was expecting like the Slave One or something like that because we haven't seen his ship yet. Although we know it's here. I guess, no, that wouldn't make sense because he flew it here after the Mandalorian showed. So I didn't know what the gift would be, so I did not expect to see the Rancor or his trainer.
Yeah, we got two gifts. We got a Rancor and we got Danny Trejo.
Yeah, which is cool. From what I heard, actually, Danny Trejo is a cousin of Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, nice.
So this is some kind of like insider dealings to get him on the show, but that was cool. He's reprising a role played by someone else in The Return of the Jedi as the Rancor trainer who, when that movie aired, that there was no character name. That's what he was called. He was left nameless until he shows up in a video game and then they gave him a name. And following that tradition, they don't give Danny Trejo a name either. He just is listed as Rancor trainer. So that was kind of cool.
that meeting with the twins, there's levels to that because they're supposed to be big, scary syndicate bosses. They have Kersantan in their employ. They can just give Rancors as gifts. And so they're tough and, you know, to be respected and feared, I would think, but they are scared of somebody else. And so like, that's nice foreshadowing. They're saying, you know, we're getting out of here. This is too hot for us. Literally. Yeah. I mean, dude just sitting there mopping his brow with a rabbit or something like that.
Yeah. Those poor rodents. Yeah,
that's so funny. But they're like, you know, we got to get out of here because, we can't handle this. And, we recommend that you do the same.
Yeah. It was funny. The parallels of the litter being held by these dudes carrying the twins and then this like hover barge that's just easily carrying the Rancor. But it was kind of hard to tell which one weighed more, this giant beast or these two huts. It was good. And then, there's this a little bit more exchange. You know, what I was curious is if this Rancor is the one that we meet in the Bad Batch animated series. Its name was Moochie. The Bad Batch gets sent on a mission to capture this Rancor for the Hutts. And when they bring him back, they get information on Fennec, who has abducted Omega. So there's if this is who this Rancor is or whatever, it's kind of like just shows how small this world is that now Fennec is back in front of this Rancor again. I doubt that's who this is because I'm sure there's thousands of Rancors in the galaxy, but I'll just dream it that way.
We start to learn more about Rancors.
Yeah, so we get to that in a second, but they, as they like kind of wrap up this conversation, the twins were like, let's just finish our business here. Here's this Rancor. We're done. We're not, you know, there's too much. This, like you said, this planet is too hot. It's bad for business. We're just going to leave. You can have it. And that's kind of how they roll away. And then at that moment, Boba turns to Kersantan and says, you're free to go. Like, you know, no harm done, no hard feelings. And he just kind of runs away.
He literally runs away.
Yeah, literally runs away. It almost felt out of character because just a minute ago, he's ripping everybody apart. And then he like kind of runs away, like with his tail between his legs. It's kind of funny.
So I looked up that guy who plays Kersantan, and I have it in my notes somewhere. His name is Cary Jones, and he is an actor, but I think he's maybe primarily a makeup guy, special effects guy. He was in the Predators movie, and he's 6'7", so no doubt he was one of the Predators.
Yeah, that guy's huge. And yeah, he's definitely intimidating. So that's cool. Wasn't the same guy who played Chewbacca? Wasn't he also like incredibly tall and 6'8", 6'9"?
Peter Mayhew, he may have been even 7 feet. I shook Peter Mayhew's hand at the San Diego Comic Con.
That's dope.
I'm 6'2", but he made me feel little. Like his hand, like I shook his hand and I felt like a little kid, like physically and mentally.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. That's a cool story. Well, while Boba and Fennec and team bring the Rancor to his new home, why don't we take a quick break and give you a chance to hear from our sponsors? We'll be right back.
This episode of Death Watch is brought to you by Skull Square Design Company. If you're a fan of Boba Fett, The Mandalorian, and the Star Wars universe as a whole, be sure to check out our shop for some great gifts for you and your family. Whether you're perusing the bazaar in Black Spire Outpost, or showing your allegiance to Kylo Ren in the First Order, we have great gifts for you to enjoy. Check out our shop when we reopen January 17th, or find us on Instagram and TikTok at Skull Squared. That's Skull with a C, as in,
see y'all real soon!
And we're back. So, as we said, they bring the Rancor in, and there's this, like, cool, like, sweet scene with Boba and this Rancor, and we learn a little bit more about their species. But, like, Boba is definitely into this creature, not as, like, a savage beast who he can have rip his enemies apart from limb to limb. But, like, he even comes down, he's like, why don't we learn to ride it? I'd love to go riding on this thing. So, I don't know, you seem like you're pretty into this sequence here. What did you think of learning about Rancors?
I like it a lot. And I like that Boba's an animal lover, you know? He comes up and gives scratchies and you know, oh, is that your spot? Yeah. You know, he's like, oh, yeah, buddy, you know, oh, you're a big boy. You know, he's like a good dog lover, you know?
Yeah, he's like speaking really sweetly to him.
And he asks, you know, he's like, what's wrong with it? And Machete says, it's depressed. Danny Trejo says it's depressed. And he's like, oh, I didn't know that they could be depressed. And like, we start to, you know, talk about the emotions of the Rancor. When did we ever expect that?
Yeah, that, it was cool. This is a little bit of a callback to that, Bad Batch episode. They talk a little bit about their temperament there too, but, seeing that this is just going to be like Boba's pet is going to be, I think, super cool. Definitely is going to come back at some point because of what he wants to do with it. But he mentions that he has ridden a beast 10 times this size. Like when Danny Trejo's like, oh, this guy's, he's big. He's like, oh, it's fine. I've ridden things 10 times. I'm trying to think about what class of animal that could even be that we know of. I was wondering if it was one of those like flying manta rays that were on Kamino. Like you see it in a quick cutscene, in Attack of the Clones, that one of the Kaminoans pops out of the water and they're flying on it and it's huge. But there aren't a lot of animals that are 10 times the size of a Rancor. And I don't know if that was just hyperbole or what, but I know, you know, in the first few episodes of season one of The Mandalorian, when Queel is kind of making fun of Mando for not riding the blurgs because Mandalorians rode the great mythosaur. I don't know how big those animals were, but you got to think there's some kind of Mandalorian heritage at play here where he's leveraging that like historical like skill set.
Yeah, I'm looking up mythosaur right now because I had forgotten the name, but I think they're huge, like dinosaur size, so that could be what we're talking about. But we've
gotcha. I thought they were extinct.
Yeah.
Like it seems at this time, like there would have been no way for Boba to have ridden one. But I don't know. We can dream. So, as he's kind of petting him, 88 pops his head out from the back, and I was like, oh, you never stand behind an animal like this. He's about to get thrown into the wall or startle him or something. None of that happens. But he's like, by the way, the mayor called back. He's busy for another at least 20 days, which is this ongoing like bit, a comedy bit that's like the mayor is unavailable and they keep giving Boba the stiff arm. So Boba's not hearing any of it. He's like, well, he tells Danny Trejo to go to the larder and give him a full Ronto, which is, you know, a large animal that he's going to feed to him. And then they head off to get in touch with the mayor.
Without the Gamorreans and with the Power Rangers.
I know these guys, they just, yeah, they're here, but I hope their role is diminished in future episodes or I'm just so ignorant about why they're important, but anyway, they're rolling behind him in their literal Power Ranger color, yellow, red, blue Vespas. And they get back to the city hall again. We get that same guy who's at the desk, but he's quickly intercepted by the major domo, played by Pasquazi, and some more of that like sarcastic banter of, oh, he's not here, sorry, busy day. Then they threaten him, and he's like, oh, you know what? I just realized I can fit you in. We can rearrange the schedule.
We'll work it out just for you.
Yeah. I'll be right back. And he just begins to run away. He goes in the throne room, locks the door, which Boba's like, I'm not having this. And they like run outside, and you see him, he's kind of pulling away. And at first I thought this speeder was kind of like the one that Han Solo steals on Corellia with Kira, because it is kind of like that flat body style,
or like Luke's original speeder.
Well, this one was like more square, and it didn't quite have the very visible I forget what we call them, but the engine mm-hmm. fan. It was a bit. It looked like a classic Cadillac, like from the 70s, with like the big long like
fins,
hood fins and all that. So anyway, he breaks out, and Boba tells the biker gang to chase him down, and you know, we get a car chase. I didn't think this was a great scene. I hate to be like a downer about any of this stuff, but I really did not love the way that the bikes moved around. None of it seemed to be like really that good.
Yeah, we weren't really that invested in it. I mean, we've got the kind of weak major domo, and then we've got the Power Rangers chasing him, and we don't really care about either side.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like the chase wasn't even like that cool in a way that like, okay, the premise of the chase was lame, but at least the stuff was cool. It was like when they would ride up on the sides of buildings or slide under stuff, they were like opportunities to be cool, but they weren't cool. And it was just too bad.
Well, there are to try to see the silver lining, we got to see more of the city, and we got to see, you know, some people and some stuff. We got to see a couple droids get the rough end of the stick there.
That is true. And there are, so the one thing that this scene does bring is like several Easter eggs. So they're riding through town. There's this point where the major domo kind of like nudges one of the biker gang guys. He flies off and smashes through this large painting of Jabba the Hutt that's being carried by two. It's like a classic like comedy chase trope. But that painting is a Ralph McQuarrie concept art for The Return of the Jedi, when Luke is standing in front of him, but they just like edited out Luke from the painting. But it's just like as if someone was holding a painting of Jabba. So that was cool. Nice. We see one of the pit droids from the from Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. There's a protocol droid that has like the white hand of Saruman on his face. Did you see that?
I saw it, but I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah, I was like,
it is the classic C-3PO in the hallway here. Getting shot at. Yeah,
yeah, that was kind of, you know, it was what it was. There's this rickshaw droid that's holding two Bith like musicians mm-hmm. or whatever. It's the same droid that's carrying around Anakin and Padme when they come to Tatooine in Attack of the Clones. So there's a couple of these like callbacks, and then the ultimate callback is at the end of it when they kind of crash the major domo like Biff from Back to the Future.
Biff,
except instead Biff.
It all comes together.
Instead of manure, it's a pile of Melu runs, the like, fruit from the Rebels series.
Yeah, that was great.
So that was a cool little. I'm curious because they're in the Rebels series. They're on Lothal, and that fruit is mentioned to be very rare, indicating it's not from Lothal. And I wonder if they actually grow native to Tatooine, or we just happen to find a vendor who's got a new shipment of them on Tatooine. So that'd be interesting to find out.
Well, you know, macadamia nuts are not rare in Hawaii, but they're rare everywhere else. So maybe it's something like that.
Yeah, good point. So at this point, we are now, it's a kind of an awkward, clunky cut here, but we go to like the spaceport. Oh, I guess the scene ends with the major domo saying, the mayor is not here. The mayor is in league with the Pikes. And then we cut to, for whatever reason, the spaceport, a large ship lands, and then a whole bunch of Pikes come out.
In Squid Game formation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the triangles come out first, and then the squares, and then the circles. Yep. This scene is also set up like the guy's trying to be discreet. One of the biker gang guys is like looking at him in their rearview mirror as if he's trying to like not be noticed. But then like as the camera pans back and he drives away, he's like right next to them. He's not hidden at all. I was like, we could do this so much better.
Yeah, please don't notice this giant telescope sticking out of my face and this bright, bright, colorful moped that I'm riding around on.
Yeah, exactly. And then he has to go to a payphone. I don't understand how there aren't. Why can't he just call him on his communicator? Anyway, this just, that whole scene was weak for me, but it sets up the kind of transition to next week's episode, probably, which is the Pikes are preparing for war. They're bringing more and more people to Tatooine. It definitely seems like the Pikes are the ones who have claimed this planet, the ones who have scared away the Hutts. So that, you know, that does not bode well for Boba. And we end on him saying, well, we better prepare ourselves or we'll be prepared. So
we get like, definitely, we get like two endings. We get like two cliffhangers. We get this one in present day. And then we also get the flashback to cliffhanger because we don't really have closure on his memory. We don't know.
Right.
We don't know the state of affairs between Boba and the Pikes.
Yeah.
The current state of affairs.
So that brings us to another edition of How to Be a Better Boss. Be like Boba Fett. It's business. It's business time. This first point, sometimes it's better to acquire the competition than to compete against them. If you see this when Boba rolls up on the Power Rangers, and rather than making them an enemy and continuing to rough them up, he just decides to hire them and bring them on his own team. So, you know, consolidating the competition is one way to create success for yourself. We also see that he takes care of his employees, even when he has urgent needs of his own. When he sends the Gamorrean to his own back to tank to heal up, he's kind of self-sacrificial in that way and puts the needs of his employees before his own. And then the final one I pulled out is don't crush your competition just because you can. He obviously at one point has Krsantan captured. He has been trying to kill him and could easily decide to get rid of him because the Hutts don't want him and whatever. But he lets business be business and sends him off. And so I think sometimes in it can be kind of a dog-eat-dog world for business in that you, just because you can destroy another company or take their market share, sometimes there's just enough to go around for everyone. So
if you do an image search for boss versus leader, you find this awesome picture of an leader, leadership leader. But then there's also a leader, L-I-T-T-E-R. So in this picture, there's a guy on top of a block, whipping the people dragging the block, and that's a boss. And then
I'm looking at
and
this.
Then there's another picture of so the top boss, there's a guy on top of a block whipping four guys to make them pull the block and him who's riding the block. And then the next picture is a leader, and there's five guys pulling the block, and the leader is one of the guys pulling the block, and there's nobody riding the block. So a boss versus a leader. Boba's doing a great job.
This is great. I love that's a awesome metaphor, especially given the litter thing that keeps coming up. Very, very cool. But Chris isn't here.
I know you're trained to talk to Chris.
Ryan,
it's okay.
What are you thinking we're going to see next week in Chapter 4?
the furtherment, the further development of what we've seen already. I think that this episode, well, episode one and three were pretty short compared to episode two. I think 38 minutes for one and three and 52 minutes for episode two. So, but still, we got a lot packed into this episode three. There's a lot of foreshadowing, foretelling, foreboding that things are going to happen. And we
foreboding.
Okay. Okay. Fetboding.
Fetboding. Yeah. I like it.
So yeah, things are going to happen, and we're getting set up for that.
Yeah. Yeah. The Pikes and the JJ Abrams biker gang they're definitely going to get it. We're kind of tying these loops together in that the biker gang destroyed his tribe in the flashback. The Pikes are now set up to destroy his crime syndicate in the present day. And those worlds are probably going to merge in some way of Boba extinguishing that threat. I think we could see him literally riding the rancor around and having that rancor just go to town on these guys.
Yeah.
That would be pretty crazy. I think you're definitely going to see some sort of emotional outburst about the annihilation of his tribe that, you know, we didn't see that moment in the flashback, but I think it will be stored up and paid back tenfold. I also think Boba could probably end up hiring Kersantan for some purpose. And, you know, because he just showed him goodwill in saving his life and letting him go, Kersantan would actually be willing to work for him. He's too cool of a character to kind of just swoop in like this and then let him go.
He is really cool. And if you look him up, I only looked him up this week, but he's been in the Star Wars universe for some time. He's got a scar on his face, which apparently Obi-Wan Kenobi gave him.
Yeah.
So we might even see him. We might even see a young Kersantan in the Obi-Wan show.
Oh yeah. Good point. That'd be a good way to tie these two shows together. I think, like I said before, we keep seeing this clip of Boba looking out the window as a kid and seeing the Slave One fly away. I don't know what that means, but it's been shown too many times for it to not tie into something. And then obviously Mace Windu has to show up at some point. I don't know where you are. You in the Mace Windu lives camp, Ryan?
Yeah, I'll join your camp, buddy.
Okay. It just is too good for them to be some kind of epic showdown. Even if it ends up being like Maul and Obi-Wan in the Rebels series, it's like this big, long relationship and extreme hatred for each other. And it ends fairly anticlimactically, but poetically. I think it would be very cool to see that.
I want to see it. I want to see it.
All right. Well, that's all for this episode. Thanks for watching. Or thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our guest host, Sam Orion. Ryan, where would you like or would you not like people to find you?
I will be found by the people who want to find me. I'm Sam Orion. Ooh, Fitzgerald. Nice. I'm Ryan Fitzgerald. My nickname's Sam Orion. I will be having a live play. Well, maybe not live play, but a live play Pathfinder podcast, coming out sometime soon, called Door to the North. So look for us there.
Nice. Well, if you like this episode, please subscribe, share, and write a review on Apple Podcasts. And as of like last week, you can now rate our show on Spotify. So if you can do that there too, that would be very appreciated and helpful in exposing our show to new listeners. You can also follow us on Instagram at Death Watch Podcast, on TikTok at Death Watch Cast, or you can email us at deathwatchpodcast@gmail.com like Ryan did, and become a guest host on a future episode. You can find our merch at etsy.com/shop/deathwatchpodcast. Thanks for listening. This is the way.
This is the way.